We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 309 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and today I've given Ruri Barlow the unenviable task of breaking down Xavi's first loss as manager of Barcelona. And since Ruri isn't necessarily a Barca fan, I generally find the non-Kool-Aid guests wind up being more optimistic than the Barca fan. So, Ruri, do you think that sounds right?
At the minute, I'm not sure if optimism is the word I'd use, just in the face of...
It's not as mean. You're not as cranky. I get that.
Just in the face of the Bayern match. But in terms of a sort of more general outlook, I think there are reasons for optimism for Barcelona. It's just the fact that they're probably coming a little bit down the line. And football fans and football in general as a sport and a business is not known for its patience, is it?
You're telling me that Twitter and media and TV stations are not as reactionary as we think they are? I don't think that's what you're saying. I think Twitter seems pretty knee-jerk. Well, anyway.
Twitter is always well-reasoned.
Of course. You take as much time as possible. But yeah, I mean, I think with Bayern Munich now 2 days away from when we're recording this, obviously any optimism is going to go down to zero after this Real Betis loss. But we definitely will hit the Bayern Munich preview. Any chance Barca might have, we'll try to reason with that. And yes, I actually did treat myself to the Bayern Dortmund match to try to do some scouting. And I don't think that made me feel any better. But first, I want to talk about the 1-0 loss to Real Betis. Rory, as you're the guest, where do you want to start with this one?
I have to say, this match kind of went as you expected it almost. I think credit to Manuel Pellegrini, because he was pretty smart in the fact that he more or less set up his shop and said, we're going to get a chance. If we finish it, we will either draw or win. And if we keep Barcelona out, we've got a good chance of doing so. That's what they did. Barcelona, for their part, I think there it is a problem that perhaps the game kind of started off. And yeah, okay, they improved in the second half with Dembélé. And he obviously makes a big difference to the whole kind of setup and the sort of route that Barcelona takes towards the goal. But on the whole, this was a pretty predictable match. And that's kind of the problem for Barca, is that they're almost predictable and they don't seem to have a way of getting around their problems, which doesn't paint well. I mean, you can't really just kind of sit and wait for players to come back and hope that maybe, I don't know, somebody catches a run of form. You have to actively solve those issues. And yeah, I'm sure we'll come on to some more of them as we go on.
Yeah, I mean, it was on second viewing of the match, I can't believe I did it to myself. And also in just, you know, checking what the hive mind had said on social media, that there was some tactical issues and mistakes I think are more fixable than I felt like when I was originally watching the match on Barca's Twitch stream. I think when I was watching the match, I'm just saying, this is ugly. There's no flow. It's disjointed. And if that supports Real Betis, how do I say this? I almost felt a little bit maligned by Real Betis, because I think the expectation that we've had for now a number of years now was, I think, prior to this season and maybe the second half of last season when Pellegrini took over, that we expect Real Betis to want to play. We expect them to, you know, honor the beautiful game in a way that other teams in the Liga, and I always throw the names of Fedafe and Cadiz out there, that they have their style and they're going to get points, but they're also trying to stay up. Real Betis are now third in the table because they are willing to play a certain style that gets the job done. And I commend them for the results. But in this case, in this match, And as much as I want to blame Real Betis, it was Barcelona that committed the 12 fouls in the first half. It was Barcelona who were a little late on the tackles. It was Barcelona that also, due to the injury for Gabi, that if you want to hear my you know, entire tirade, he apparently is fine. He's out of hospital. You know, he's passed through concussion protocol. He's okay. But as that was happening, and then I did the match review before we knew he had gotten home from the hospital, I thought that was insane that he wasn't taken off originally. I, you know, again, the whole head injury thing, I don't want to do it again. It's the thing that fires me up the most. But I did promise, though, people that for on the match review that to tell the story, when I was playing, you know, about 10, 11, 12 years ago, I had an incident. So it's very personal to me where I've had three concussions before. I have a good memory, but sometimes it affects certain things that my directional sense sometimes. And I wound up going up for a header with somebody. I wound up landing on a rock and my coach told me, you know, to carry on. And then it wasn't until like my ear was bleeding that I realized that like we have a bigger problem here. So then I wound up going to the doctor like the next day after I'd slept and whatever. And I had headaches for weeks. And it's this whole thing that especially, I mean, I was actually the same age as Gabi. I was 17 when it happened. Gabi's 17 now. And fortunately, you know, I've been fine the rest of my life. I'm okay. But my fear is that Gabi won't be, because there's a lot of people and a lot of footballers especially who have all of that head contact, right? I was playing at a secondary level. My career ended, you know, within a year. So for him, if we want him to have a 15-year career and not have headaches the rest of his life, you got to take these things seriously. And so I was just, I guess I said I wouldn't do it, but there I did it anyway. I was just embarrassed by the lack of protocol and that was frustrating. But anyway, because of the injury to Gabi, 5 more minutes were added to the first half. And again, I think that's on Barca. That's the fact that Barca were just not even a step slow to it, but they were willing to get, I think there's a difference between being physical and playing to what the other team is trying to do when they muddy the game, but also kind of playing into that. I felt like Barca did that. They were not only were they committing too many fouls, but they were doing that because they were losing the duels. They were losing the 50-50 balls. And I mean, is there one player that we look at? I mean, I have the name, but is there one player you look at as to why that might've happened?
I don't think it's I think when you're slow to the ball, and I think when you're committing lots of fouls, I think it's, like you say, it's a symptom of the team not being able to get there fast enough. And yeah, okay, we know that Xavi wants to press, and that I think is something that's positive for a lot of fans. But if you don't get there and you are pressing, you do have to commit the foul. And I think that's just kind of fair enough. I think it's smart, and I'd rather see them committing the fouls than letting the players go, because when they do get in behind you and you don't manage to commit that foul, then you see Sergio Canales and he manages to take a touch and inside kind of sends Lenglet, and that's where the goal comes from. I think, I don't know if this is the name you're edging towards, but Memphis Depay.
Yep.
What a conundrum of a player he is, because Barcelona, they don't have another option. And I've seen Kevin Williams, who's very big on Barca Twitter, say that he would happily sit him and put him on the bench. And yeah, okay, fair enough. I understand the logic behind that. In fact, I'd almost agree with it. But Luke de Jong is the other option, and Luke de Jong is not much of an option at the minute, has to be said, and certainly not what Xavi's looking for. I think Memphis Depay, I was writing about him before, and it's almost as if he has like writer's block, but every time he kind of gets on the ball, it's like he's getting more and more desperate to try and get around it and solve it. He's not approaching it with the sort of calmness and the confidence that he did at the start of the season. If you look at kind of, there's a point in the Benfica match, I think, where he kind of goes through on goal and he cuts inside and he takes 2-3 touches, chance is gone. And it's just the symptom of that lack of confidence. Whereas against Athletic in the first kind of, or second game of the league season, bouncing ball, left foot, thunders at home. That's what you want from your striker. And even against Getafe in the following game after that, he cuts inside and takes a shot fairly swiftly. Those extra touches are the symptom of a player who's, I have to say, I got it a little bit wrong. I thought Depay would have the mentality and almost the arrogance to brush off the sort of mental trauma of Barcelona and just kind of wade through it, be his own man and try and sort of, be the star player for this Barcelona side. But he's been sucked into this kind of malaise that the rest of the squad has found itself in as well. And it's really playing havoc with Barcelona because they don't have another forward. They need to rely on Depay. And I think the big stats, which I'm sure you have to hand down, is 20 balls that he lost at the weekend. And that's pretty costly.
It's a high number. Yeah, I mean, and I've not to even defended him, but I've said that the expectation for Dubai that he'd finish with like 22 goals this season. And he's actually on pace for that with 9 goals already. The Champions League is really where he was missing those chances, but he's also only came off the field in one match this season. He's played 90 minutes the year. I mean, not year, but week in and week out, no rotation whatsoever. And yeah, I mean, there is this world that I've said before that if you're going to put Gabi, Busquets, De Jong, Nico and Pedri all on the field at the same time, that means Pedri's probably going to have to occupy that left wing where he played at Las Palmas. Ansu's going to be in the middle. And I mean, on his day, Dembele's on the right. And that is probably the most dynamic Barca you have. And Memphis is not a part of that. And that is no disservice to Memphis. But I think in this style, and it's not just Memphis, because I think for Barcelona, there was one thing or so. And again, we could speak of the individuals, but there was one thing that seemed to be missing from every player that you could go from around the field, all 11 players. You go, if he had done this a little bit better, that would have made something that this other player did. It would have made more sense, right? It all would have worked together. So like for Memphis, for example, yeah, you said it, 0 shots, 0 successful dribbles, only 24 passes, 2 key passes, sure, but 20 times losing possession, that's not going to get the job done, especially when he's dropping in deep. But two of the big things too, is especially when we try to criticize young players, and I don't want to be criticizing young players, but young players are inconsistent. And one of the other names that I was thinking about alongside Gabi in the first half, but Nico didn't have his best day. And for me, it's one of those where Memphis, we're asking if it's more of a systemic issue, if this is a long-term problem. But with Nico, because he's 19 years old, I'm able to say, hey, you were promised that young players are going to have inconsistent days. And Gabi and Nico, whether it's because they're starting every match for FC Barcelona now, right, and just being thrown right into the fire, that press for Barcelona was the worst that it's been. And I think it's really telling that with Barcelona pressing and being as organized as they were defensively, that they were able to get at least a draw or a win in their first 3 matches. And now the press did look like it was a bit too disjointed. It seems like those lines, I mean, especially those pass lines when you saw them, weren't as connected as they were in the previous 3 matches. So Barcelona weren't able to make their own luck, if you will. And this time around, it was Real Betis that made that luck because Barca, they gave them a bit too much. So for Nico being a step slow, losing his duels, the bigger issue with Nico wasn't exactly that. It wasn't even the fouling, as you said. It was that he wasn't making any of those late runs. There were opportunities. There were times when Lenglet would be on the ball or when Araujo would be on the ball and then Memphis would drop in deep. And Nico was not trying to get in behind that back line. And when Xavi sets up his team to play with these high interiors, you have to have those runs into the box. And if you're going to rotate out Frankie de Jong, then the spacing is going to be completely incorrect without Nico. And I thought that Nico, in this instance, did Memphis no favors. Memphis, his first touch wasn't good enough, and he wasn't making the decisions quick enough. But Nico, again, not making those runs in behind, was not giving Memphis that first option. And then the second option in Coutinho and Easy Abde on the other side, right? Abde's job is what? To go right at a back line. He's really dribbly. Go right at him. But his body orientation was not in the proper spots multiple times to receive the ball. He would seemingly be receiving the ball behind him, and then he'd have to completely move, and now the defense is in place. So he wasn't timing things or giving them the right options. And then it's also a credit to Dembélé, but it's no surprise that Dest was much better, or at least even effective. He was not in any way effective when it was him and Abde. And I mean, that's a 19-year-old and 20-year-old, and it's not even, you know, necessarily their ages, but their body orientation together, clearly they had never played together. And you could see that in the way that they weren't communicating. Dembélé comes on, who Dest has played with and played well with before, and now Dest is finally getting forward. And it's not on Abde. It's that these combinations are not working because not only are they too young, they never play together. And then the other side with Coutinho, he's the same way. Coutinho was in no way receiving that ball to go forward with the ball. And that's been a criticism of him for a while now. But unless he's coming in and Memphis is vacating that space, that is always going to be Coutinho's first, second, and third look as to where he wants to move on the field. But that's not what this system is calling for, which is why I continue to say, I don't even blame Coutinho. It just, he doesn't fit. Like what he wants to do, his style of play does not fit Xavi's intentions on this field. And you could, I mean, it's just, it's unfortunate for Coutinho. I'm not even blaming him now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I will say the first 10 minutes, there was one sort of move where he kind of breezed past his defender. There's another where he sort of gets the shot and he'll go. And for 10 minutes, I kind of sat up and I was just like, has Xavi done the impossible and sort of got Coutinho like playing as if he was a proper professional footballer again? But sadly, he sort of descended back into his general spell. Yeah, I think you put a lot of sort of symptoms of Barcelona's sort of failures there, and you pointed out a lot of things that don't fit, that don't quite work. And the temptation is to be like, well, this is what you need to do to fix that. And I'm sure Albert Blaya, I'm sure he also has some sort of solutions towards that. But it's also just a reality that if you take Frenkie de Jong out and then you end up playing Riqui Puig and Coutinho for most of the match, where you had Frenkie de Jong and Gabi, your pressing is just not going to be as good because they are not as good at that one way or another. Riqui Puig and Coutinho both probably not 100% match fit either. Neither of them really played regularly for years now. So, yeah, I mean, it's a symptom of kind of the issues of the Barcelona squad, and there is no quick fix. And I think that's probably the most frustrating thing for Barcelona, for Xavi. There is no quick fix. You just have to wait. You have to play it out, and you have to try and make gradual gains. And yeah, against sides like Real Betis, if they are set up well, if they take their chances, Barcelona are going to struggle this season. There's just no other way around it. I think one of the things that has disappointed me in this Barcelona side, and I think not enough is being made of the fact that Messi is gone. I mean, it's just to put it straight out there, Koeman's issues, his where he sort of fell into problems, and a lot of criticism that he received, I think sort of blinded us to the fact that Messi wasn't there as well, and that's a big problem. And I think for the likes of Nico, for the likes of Gabi, even De Jong, these players are the ones that have to be sort of playing the final ball, and that's really missing from Barcelona at the minute. And part of that is that you don't have quite the runs that you would like to have, but Barcelona, they don't play a pass through the middle of the defense anymore. Like, okay, sometimes you get the odd cross, but they don't find themselves in a position in the interior where Riqui Puig, Coutinho, Gavi, whoever it is, they receive the ball, they can look up and then slot a pass through the defenders. That just doesn't happen. And it's partly because of the runs. It's partly because you've got Depay playing nine. But it's also partly, I think, a lack of sort of not willingness to take responsibility, but you're not used to it. When you can give the ball to Messi and you know that he is the guy who's going to play the final ball, then it makes a huge difference to your game because you know you don't have to rely on yourself for that. Whereas asking people to start doing something that they're not used to, that they're not in the habit of doing, I think that's really coming back to bite Barcelona a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, like, the crazy thing about the personnel and transfers or whatever we go back to, that with Messi gone, I mean, the biggest thing is time, is that in time, you hope that Dembele, I mean, if he renews or not, but you hope that whoever comes in to potentially replace him, even that the likes of Ansu playing with Memphis, playing with Dembele or some other actual, you know, 24 to 28 year old right winger, again, it's no disrespect to Abe or Ilias Akolmas or any of the other options, is that when you have a player who's actual professional footballer for a number of years and understand certain circumstances and pressure and all those things, then you have a shared responsibility. And you're right, all of that attack is solely on the shoes of Memphis, because even Coutinho isn't really a goal scorer. I mean, none of those are players that put the ball in the back of the net. And on the point of chances, like, Barcelona have 31 big chances this year that they've created. They've scored 23 of them. And for Real Madrid, They have 36 big chances they've created, and somehow they've scored 37 goals. So, I mean, that's the difference between the 13 points in the table, that Real Madrid somehow have scored an additional goal to the big chances they've created. And meanwhile, Barcelona, I mean, that's making your own luck. And meanwhile, Barcelona have created 31 big chances and they've converted on 23 of them. And I mean, yeah. And I am arguing with certain people, you know, whether it's the Patreon or in the Facebook group about those big chances and the finishing and the importance of those. So, I mean, these are nuanced conversations, but I mean, certainly what I will concede and would agree with is that even under, I mean, and I think Messi, you're right, is the catalyst for all of it, that there are just less opportunities happening. Even if those big chances are being created, what is the quality of those chances as well? Because whether you call that Coutinho shot a big chance, which is what it was, you never felt like that ball was going in the back of the net, regardless of it. I mean, and that's, again, no disrespect to Coutinho. The other thing I would say, too, I want to do the Ricky Pooch thing, because we always obviously have the Ricky Pooch stands out there. It's not even about him playing or playing time or whether or not he played well or not. But I want to get into how, when Gabi went off and Puig came in, tactically things changed, and they changed for the worse, because Sergio Busquets was Barca's best player for the first 20 minutes of that game. I mean, his seven long balls, when you talk about that ball up through the middle, he's the only one, that being Busquets, who's doing this. The seven long balls, three of them were attempted up through the middle. He was 7 of 8 on his duels, 3 interceptions, 5 tackles. Sergio Busquets was really, really good in that game. And I know he was, quote unquote, out of position because Araujo got stuck upfield on the counterattack. And yeah, he's too slow for that instant. But Busquets was a reason, in his press in particular, and his ability to win the ball back, was why Barcelona did not concede even more. I want to start by saying that. The issue when Gabi went off the field is that Puig is an entirely different player who plays much deeper. So if you're breaking it up in those triangles and those zones, Busquets was dropping back as a third center back only when Puig came on the field, because Puig sets up a bit deeper to receive the ball, and Puig takes an extra 1 or 2 touches before he delivers that magical Puig ball that we know he can do, or that diagonal. And I think, to your point as well about Puig, because he's not match fit, we can continue to say it, that, I mean, he did have 1 interception. He was 2 for 3 in his duels. He was 1 for 2 in his long balls, 54 touches total, 43 of 45 in his passing. Puig's metrics looked good, but he couldn't be a difference maker because he didn't look match fit. His positioning was just, he would come a little bit too close to receive the ball, and then it would just break everything down. Real Betis would always have time to set up. So I felt like Puig was an example of how the ball was just moving a bit too slowly for Barcelona once he came on the field, because Real Betis were match fit and prepared for just, for, you know, they were willing to wait for Puig to get up to match speed, if you will. So again, it's not an indictment of Puig and his larger career or where he belongs in this rotation or whatever it is. Like, I think that's always the argument. We always get stuck there. But Puig's the example of a rotation player who's not really playing, who, when he comes on the field, he changes the circumstances, he changes the system as to how they're playing. And Puig, unfortunately, neutralized a bit of what Busquets could do. So we can praise Puig for what he did in his role, but Barca were worse when he was on the field. Does that make sense? Like, if it felt, can you add nuance to it? Because I know I'm going to get hate anyway. That's what happens when you go after Puig in any way.
Yeah, I think the problem with Ricky Puig, it's such a bizarre kind of thing, in the sense that Ricky Puig, I think, came to represent something larger than him, the player itself, under Valverde. He was the representative of La Masia not getting a chance, or La Masia being sort of wasted. And you saw sort of glimpses when he first came into the team, certainly, of things that he could do. And they were kind of the glimpses that you see from a young player, and you think, yeah, okay, he's got talent, he can add something. The problem is, from when Ricky Puig has come in to now, I don't know if we've kind of seen him become a more rounded player. And that is an issue, because I think when somebody sort of first comes in and you forgive the mistakes that perhaps like Gabi and Nico are making just now, but by the time they reach, say, Frankie de Jong's age, after they've been sort of in senior football for 4 or 5 years, you can't forgive that. And okay, Ricky Puig, as we say, hasn't had sort of a lot of game time, isn't match fit, and yeah, his footballing development isn't normal. It hasn't been linear, certainly in terms of kind of game time. But yeah, some of the holes in his game are kind of less forgivable now he's been around so long, if that makes sense. Whereas like when he first came in, you just kind of appreciate the talent, you appreciate the things he can do, and you look at that. Whereas now, yeah, okay, I like Ricky Puig as a player. I think he does have things, but to play him as an interior, I mean, personally, if I was setting up, I don't want to play him against Guido Rodriguez and Sergio Canales, because they are better players than him, and I know that he's going to get exploited by them at various points.
Yeah, I mean, he's 22 now. It's unfortunate because that's the way the football as a business works. But yeah, at 18, 19, you go, okay, I mean, what will be, what can be, especially with linear progress. But now that he's 22, he is on the fringes of Barcelona. And, you know, again, the big picture for me is that if Puig is coming in for 30, I said this at the start of the year, if he comes in for 30 to 33 appearances, playing an average of 25 minutes off the bench, he certainly does have a role. You could see that when Barca, especially when Dembele came on and the spacing changed on the field, and Real Betis were in that low block. When a team settles into a low block, you see the best of Puig. You see that if he's got the field directly right in front of him, because in that La Masia way of Busquets, Puig also defends better on the front foot. He's not good at backtracking. He's not good at these counterattacking games. But Xavi didn't have any other options other than call on the 22-year-old Puig in this instance to come on for Gabi, because putting on Frankie earlier, I think it was probably agreed on that Frankie would not play for those 45 minutes. But I think the belief was that, Puig, can you push upfield? But I think Puig was more comfortable, again, being that quarterback, not even being a pivot. He's not a pivot, but to receive the ball and be able to see the whole field in front of him and go into that space, whether it's dribble in that space or to find that ball. But as we said, because it was just a bit too slow, it shuts everything down. But again, Memphis, not on his day. He was not helping. And Eze Abde, again, his body orientation, he was not receiving properly. Even the long ball or the diagonal ball that Puig delivered to Eze Abde, it was just that second of hesitation from Abde, even when he received the ball, because he wasn't prepared to fully receive it in stride. And Real Betis and Alex Moreno, who's a good player. And this is again a credit to the third place side in the Liga, that Mark Bartra, I mean, he's the reason why it wasn't 1-1, because Mark Bartra in that second half was, I mean, he was wherever he needed to be. And Dembele should have turned that match into 1-1. I mean, he could have turned it into 1-0 before that for Barcelona. So I think before we finish up the Real Betis thing, I do actually want to give a compliment. I want to be a little positive for a second. And I want to say that Lenglet is a player that I have said I would not be surprised if he is sold in January, if there are takers, or the summertime. It just makes sense where he is on the depth chart. He's a left-footed center back, and that might be the only one of the only reasons why he's still around, other than that no one else is calling. But a credit to Albert Blaya, send that on Twitter. I always recommend everybody follow him. It's in Spanish, so hit that translate button. But he actually had his best game, not only statistically, but I was relaying on the Twitch stream. I did not say his name once until that goal was scored, and that's a good thing. He was really good in his tackling. He was always in the right spot where he needed to be. He was supportive to Araujo on that back line. And as far as his passing was, I mean, I tried to look this up. He had his best passing day ever in a Barcelona uniform. He had 12 ball recoveries, which is his most ever. And I think he was 3 for 4 on long balls or something, which is somehow, again, breaks my brain that that's his best ever. But the case is with Lenglet, he usually doesn't do that. And he had one ball in particular to Memphis up through the middle. That was exactly what Xavi asked him to do. And so I actually optimistically am saying, hey, if Lenglet can do what Xavi's asking him to do, then maybe these younger players who were even created in the cauldron of La Masia and are already have this things kind of in their DNA, Xavi just has to get that out of them. And I know it's unfair for me to say, use the word DNA. I think we overuse terms like that. I think players are players, and yeah, you can learn a certain way, but you also have to actually become that player. And I think every body type is different even. So, you know, even though Nico and Gabi were both raised in La Masia, you're talking about 3 or 4 inches centimeters on their, as far as their height. And you're also talking about a bit of weight too. So their bodies have to work differently. You have to orient your body differently. And yeah, I mean, I think for Lenglet, credit to him, he had a good day. And him and Araujo looked solid back there until the counterattack happened. And I said, I think it wasn't necessarily on the back line this time around. I think it was systemic on what was happening before that. I also thought, to be negative, that Frankie de Jong never really found the game. He came in, and I just don't think, maybe coming off the bench isn't for him, but he didn't look ready for this one, which is a shame.
Yeah, no, I think they said it on the Siempre Positivo podcast as well. Barcelona defended better. Like they weren't bad defensively for most of the game. And okay, Real Betis had the odd spell where they'd kind of come forward and look a little bit dangerous, but it didn't really create that many chances. I mean, there's the one that was disallowed for offside. I mean, that was kind of more on Ter Stegen than it was the defense. And then there's obviously the goal. But as a whole, you have to look at it off the ball as a reasonably good game from the defense. I think the one thing that's really bothering me about Xavi so far is the lack of Jordi Alba, to be honest. I think the idea of the wingers, it makes sense. That's what he wants to do, and completely kind of agree with it in a sense, in the fact that for his game plan, they need to be there. But on the other hand, Jordi Alba is pretty much your best weapon almost as an assister. Like, I mean, Ousmane Dembélé perhaps aside, Jordi Alba provides a lot of assists. He's one of the best fullbacks delivering a ball.
Well, no, I'm doubling that. We'll double that on it. His accuracy on crosses is, yeah, way better than Dembélé's.
Yeah, yeah.
Dembélé's is better than Easy Abde, the 19-year-old, in his crossing. But again, that's not saying anything. I don't think Dembélé is a great crosser of the ball, but Alba's pretty good.
Yeah, and I think if you have him delivering the ball from deep, okay, one or two of them might come off, but where he is best is sort of getting sort of in behind and then cutting the ball back or playing it sort of from very close to the corner flag. And I think the lack of that is really hurting Barcelona. And I do think that the fullbacks perhaps needed to be perhaps held back a little bit and just sort of to make Barcelona a bit more solid and so that they have a bit more balance. But yeah, Alba's one of your best weapons. You need to be exploiting that in a team which has very few of them at the moment.
I mean, Coutinho missed that overlapping pass two or three times. I mean, I don't want to be too critical of him, but I have never favored that the combination of Alba and Coutinho. I don't know what it is, but their spacing is always off. It just doesn't work. It's one of those things where, like, I mean, you see it. It's the eye test, and then the metrics back it up. I mean, you're looking again at their pass chart. Yes, they had the fifth most passes from one player to another, Alba to Coutinho. But you looked at the heat map of where those passes were taking place, and they were all taking place at midfield. Almost none of them took place in the final third. And again, it's that Barcelona, especially when Gabi left that game, Barcelona were no longer bringing any pressure into Real Betis' final third. The heat map from Busquets went from just over the midfield line to Barca's own half of the field. And once that line of confrontation, and I think that's the other thing too, that against Bayern Munich, as we're going to transition a little bit here, the line of confrontation is what terrifies me about the Bayern Munich. It's really like more than anything else. Because I mean, Benfica, and that was a credit to Barca when they had spells against Benfica and they looked like they were going to get that goal because Benfica were just playing for a draw. Barca were able to bring up that line of confrontation. They just didn't get the ball in the back of the net, which is again, an endemic problem that we've been talking about for a while. I'm finishing. We already did that. But the line of confrontation, they were able to bring it higher. Against Real Betis, I don't think Barcelona, because they never really controlled that match, whether it was rotation, match fitness for a lot of players, whatever it was, they weren't. Real Betis were kind of playing it where they wanted to play it defensively. And so they never even, for more than 15, 20 minutes, right? Real Betis were not in a low block or even a medium block. They were basically playing it straight up. And prior to that, even Villarreal, Barcelona were able to pressure them. And they were forcing Unai Emery's team to, and you can talk about their problems. That's, I mean, you wrote about that actually, right? I think about their problems. But forcing Villarreal, who wanted to play out, were still forced into a low block. And then against Espanyol, the same thing. Espanyol defended with all 11 players in the box at one point. So that was Barcelona bringing up the line of confrontation. And what was worrying about Real Betis is that they allowed Real Betis to play that match on their terms. The problem with Bayern Munich is that they're so good that they don't have to, I mean, they don't care where the line of confrontation is. They don't have one. The line of confrontation is wherever their really good players, which is all 11 of them, are on the field and how quickly they break through. They don't actually need, they don't set up anything. So Barcelona, for the first time, I think even Benfica are a really good side, but they decided to let Barca possess the ball and let Barca control the game if they could. And Barcelona, it ended 0-0 because Barcelona couldn't finish. But Bayern are going to be the first team that Xavi is going to play that is not going to allow, not even allow, but they're going to say, Barcelona, whether you have possession or not, we don't care. Our line of confrontation is going to be in your half. We're going to put you on the back foot. And I don't know how you're going to play out of that. And I mean, yeah, this one's tough. I don't know where you want to start with the Bayern preview here. Do you want to start with the memes and the lols about Lewandowski and the Ballon d'Or? Or do you want to start with actual talking about tactics or trying to figure out a way that Barca has a chance?
I think the fascinating thing for me with this one is it's almost like the fact that Xavi is playing against Bayern and they need to win versus sort of Koeman in the first game of the Champions League group stages. And Koeman got so much criticism for the way that they played and the way that's set out and the negativity that he showed. How brave are you, Xavi? Like, how much do you want to confront Bayern? And I saw, I mean, not that I believe that Sport have the inside track, but like Sport were reporting that he was going to go 3-4-3 for this game and go very attacking with kind of Dembélé as the wide player on the right-hand side of that. And yeah, it's a really interesting sort of mental battle. Is do you set your players out to be positive, to push high up and risk getting completely destroyed, or do you kind of balance it? I think you are going to have to defend at some point in this game, mm-hmm. and that's a problem for Barcelona. They're just going to have to do the best they can when they're stuck kind of deep in their own half. I think for them, the most important thing is that yeah, sort of neutralizing that press right after they win the ball. If you look at the game, I think, where Bayern got beat 5-0 against Gladbach, Gladbach were just playing one-touch football. That's all they did, essentially, to get in behind Bayern to score goals against them. And it was impressive. And yeah, okay, that's probably the hardest thing to do in football, is to play at one touch and be accurate. But yeah, Barcelona need to play the first 2-3 passes after they get the ball really quickly, hold on to it, or get in behind, one of the two. They cannot lose it. They cannot go backwards. They cannot go back to Ter Stegen, because then they will lose the ball and it will become claustrophobic. I'll be interested to see how much Xabi puts on the line in the first 20 minutes, how much he kind of goes for it initially and sees if he can kind of get an early goal and get ahead, or whether he sort of waits it out and sort of, yeah, maybe sees if he can find something later on in the game.
Well, that possible 11 you're talking about that was put out there was Ter Stegen in net, Araujo, Piqué, and Eric Garcia along the back line, Nico, De Jong, Busquets, Gabi somewhere in the midfield, potentially two pivots and two interiors, and then Dembele, Memphis, and Alba from right to left across the top. And looking at that, I mean, as I kind of complimented Langley, I can't believe I'm saying this. I mean, again, I've kind of always pushed a bit for him for Eric because of his progressive passing and just how important he is to breaking a press. But with the way that Bayern are going to press and the ability they have to win those 50-50 ball to come right at you, I mean, just like in the first match, actually, it was Robert Lewandowski who was finding a way to match himself up 1v1 with Eric Garcia, and I don't want to see that again. So I think Langley, he's the only player from the Real Betis match that has earned the second straight start. So I actually would start Langley in place of Piqué, in place of Eric Garcia, and then have Langley, Piqué, and Araujo all along the back line in that way. Again, I thought Langley was positive on the ball against Real Betis. He's going to be much largely tested against Bayern Munich to break that press, but again, he's a player that I would put confidence in to do that just based on his last performance and not the previous three seasons. So I know it's a lot to ask, but you have to have things go right for you for if you're going to beat Bayern Munich. That's true. Yeah, and then De Jong, Busquets, Gabi, Nico, they're going to have to get in on that press. Whatever malaise it was, they're going to have to shake all that off. As I said, Busquets being the one that, again, was bright against Real Betis, I thought, too. So all the other three have to get back on the horse and figure it out. And I think this idea that Bayern Munich are going to athletically overrun Gabi, Nico, and Frankie de Jong, I mean, Busquets is one thing, but the other three should be able to go toe-to-toe with whoever it is, whether it's Tolisso or whether it is Müller or Goretzka, whoever it may be. I mean, Gabi went after Goretzka in the first matchup. So it's not an athleticism or physicality thing. To me, that physical game comes down to belief and system. And as you said, letting the ball beat Bayern instead of, which is what Mönchengladbach did, and not making sure, oh, we have to be them. We have to be physical and 50-50. And I think that's overdone a bit. I think this Barcelona side with Nico and De Jong and Gabi have been physical enough on the press to win those 50-50 balls. And numerically, they are winning more of those duels. Barca are than their opponents have under Xavi, something they didn't necessarily do under Koeman. But they're winning more duels, especially those aerial duels in the air, and they're in the right positions. And is an extra, you know, one or two training sessions enough to, you know, refine those things? And then up top, as we said, with Dembele up there instead of, no offense to Eze Abde, but and then Alba on the other side. If you start Alba just the winger and not right to say, Alba, you don't even have to worry about defending. You have Lenglet behind you or whatever. So get back when you need to, obviously, because Kingsley Coman or whoever it is on that right wing, whether it's him or Gnabry, you're going to have to worry about them. But having somebody run off Memphis was so much brighter when Dembele is on the field. And if he is ready and fit to start this match, I don't care about his contract. I don't care about any of that. This match is all that matters. So you start Dembele because, I mean, there are no credits about his defensive ability. I mean, they're not saying they're non-existent, but put Araujo behind Dembele. And then you have Busquets and likely Nico on that right side as the right interior. Yeah, and then they have to defend for their lives. And then let Dembele go off to the races and try to make sure that Bayern cannot completely set up their entire attack in your half of the field. And then, unfortunately for Barca, it's another thing about the luck part of this, that Ansu, they're keeping him out, which I'm totally fine with because he's not ready. But in classic Barca luck, if you will, Kimmich is likely back for this match at the time of recording. He's likely going to be available. And Kimmich is one of the best players in the world, full stop. That's it. Kimmich is one of the most commanding, important players. Even if he's having not his typical Kimmich year, he's just so good. And Barca just don't have Joshua Kimmich. They just don't. They don't. I mean, Frankie de Jong does part of it. Busquets does part of what he does. But I mean, Kimmich is just Kimmich. That's what it is. And so having him in that midfield, and then Lewandowski is the best striker in the world. And so you have a back line and a goalkeeper that are trying to find their fitness, trying to find their continuity, trying to find the organization. But I mean, facing Robert Lewandowski as you are a work in progress, no, obviously doesn't give us any hope at all.
Yeah. And you mentioned kind of some of the Bayern players there. On a very basic level, Bayern are a better team than Barcelona. Like 11 against 11, they have better players. On another level, you've got Nagelsmann, who's a coach who knows how to tactically set up a team. He's proven as a manager. He's no soft touch. And so the very combination of those two very simplistic facts makes this, as you say, a miracle game for Barcelona. They need a miracle. On the other hand, you look at the kind of first 20, 30 minutes of that first leg, and if you want to find stuff to hang on to, Luke de Jong did kind of almost get through one-on-one, but was just so slow that he couldn't quite get past the Bayern defender. If you swap that out for Dembele, then there's a chance. My one sort of point of interest is whether he moves Dembele a little bit inside, which I don't know if I want to do, but having him directly up against Alphonso Davies kind of negates part of what makes him so good. So I wonder if you kind of have him closer to Depay, him in behind, and then Depay kind of dropping off a little bit more. It's an interesting, it's a nightmare game to set up for Xavi, but he's going to really have to prove his chops. And I think we will see just how committed to the philosophy, in inverted commas, that he is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the thing, and he said about Bayern that those, obviously people were talking about them not having a chance, but if he can get these players to believe in something, and there is something I think in sports that is unspoken, that isn't just coming down to tactics, because you're right, on paper, even if Bayern Munich, the players aren't up to it, Nagelsmann at halftime will figure something out. They have the talent to be able to bring somebody off the bench to even change a match if things aren't going well. And meanwhile, if Xavi starts at 11, he's going to look down his bench and go, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what happens here. I don't know what we do. I mean, he just doesn't have the personnel to be able to completely turn a match on its head the way Bayern could do by putting in, whether it's Gnabry from the bench or Coman from the bench or whoever it may be that doesn't start this match for Bayern Munich, because they just have so many talented players. And more significantly, I think the thing I'm worried about is that Barcelona has never won in Bavaria, even at their best, even in the days of Messi. Bayern are just so much more comfortable even at home, even without the fans. And they make you know about it. They're emboldened. They're confident. And so for Barcelona, I want to see them match their confidence in the way that Benfica did. Because yes, Bayern got through Benfica, but it took a long time. I mean, even against Dortmund, the one thing I will say about Bayern Munich is, yes, even while their defense is much more stable than Barcelona's at the moment, it's the one spot where you go, I'm not sure about that, right? If he starts Nagelsmann, if he starts Sula, Dembélé can beat Sula 1v1. I mean, he can get around him. There is a way through that Bayern Munich defense that we have seen a few teams do this season. I mean, even, yes, Barca don't have Erling Haaland, but Dortmund were finding space. And if not for Mats Hummels, Dortmund won that match. And I mean, that's something where, yes, Bayern won, you know, the Klassiker, and obviously all the news is Lewandowski again, right? And that's all it is, that to the sword went Dortmund. But Dortmund, they shot themselves in the foot. And for Bayern Munich, it is playing to their level, yes, but it's also mitigating your own issues in a way that, as I said against Real Betis, I thought Barca as a team kind of beat themselves. And that always gives me hope, and where I continue, I mean, to be overly optimistic about Xavi. He's not some savior, of course not. But I think Xavi is such a thinker, and we've read stuff in The Athletic from Dermot Corrigan that Xavi is so intense and so concerned about every minute tactic detail, every minute detail about emotion, about individual players, about where a player's headspace is at, what their pre-match routine or ritual is. And he is still tinkering with all those things. And it's a process, sure. But there is this world, there is this bizarre world where he's able to get the best out of the 11 that he puts on the field. And you're right that these are world-class players that we've seen De Jong, one pass touching with Netherlands. We've seen Busquets, Gabi. We've seen Nico capable of it. These are players that are capable of this thing. I mean, Barca still have a world 11 that all 11 that we named other than Nico are international caliber players. I mean, even PK, you know, for the Catalan national team now, but anyway, I mean, he's a World Cup winner and all that stuff, but you have, I mean, class players all around Barcelona. And if Xavi can find a way to get them to believe, it might just come down to something like that. And yeah, then you put your faith in Dinamo Kiev on the other side of it. I mean, that is part of it too, but I don't know. So answer me this, Rory. So what should I be reacting with? How should I feel? What should be my first words if Barcelona don't manage to get by Bayern Munich. I mean, let's say, God forbid, the worst scenario where they draw with Bayern Munich and Benfica bids Dynamo Kiev. I mean, give me that situation. But I mean, what should I say? I mean, like, I know even if it's expected that Barcelona are not going to get the result they want and drop the Europa League, what's the first thought after that?
I think if Barcelona draw against Bayern Munich, you have to look at it as a progress. I mean, they've not been able to compete with Bayern at all in recent years. And so if they manage to go to Bavaria and get a draw, you have to look at it as progress and just curse the luck that Koeman was there kind of longer than he needed to be.
So I guess that was too easy for you. Okay, so what happens if Bayern Munich do the Bayern Munich thing and Barcelona lose 4-0 in Bavaria and they just weren't as good? Where do we go from there with Barcelona heading down to the Europa League?
I think part of it depends on the context of the match and how Barcelona set up. If they do similar things to the things they did under Koeman and they lose in the exact same way, then yeah, you've got to ask a few questions of Xavi, and that isn't good. If they go out, they give their best, they can't finish again, and they get sort of close enough for 50-60 minutes, again, I think you have to look at the positive side of that and just accept that this is a really rough season for Barcelona and they're going to struggle. Their aim for me has to be top four, try and win a cup at the same time. Maybe that's Europa League. It's a really tricky situation. They're on a hiding to nothing. There is no kind of fallback for this Barcelona side or fallback for Xavi in a sense. They just need to win this for the money, essentially, in my mind, because I don't think either of us think Barca are going to go to the Champions League final and win it. I mean, mentality-wise, it'd be huge if they could get something out of Bayern here. But yeah, this is... It's about money and it's about being able to sort of make gains mentally, I think, for Barcelona more than anything else.
Well, yeah, right. It's like Barcelona, it's like rock bottom is the term, but there's been like almost three or four rock bottoms that Culés have had to face in the last year.
It keeps getting lower.
but it doesn't in a way that, and I have the stat to back it up, that with Bartomeu, when once it was revealed that the financial debt that Barcelona is, obviously most fans, especially on the internet, aren't too concerned with finances, but it got to a point where I kept parroting it on the podcast here that the numbers are really, really bad. It's going to be really dire for a long time. And when you know that you're in a bad situation for a long amount of time, it can feel that sadness is elongated over the course of time, right? And so the finances are something that I'm never really doom and gloom every day, but you wake up and like, that's another bummer, right? Like that it feels like it's always, you're from the UK. So it feels like it's always raining a little bit every day, right? But it just kind of becomes your life, right? It becomes nature, becomes the way you live your life. And for Xavi, I mean, again, the positive, that, okay, Xavi's in, they turned the corner, but even going back to when Messi left, the day Messi left, is that one of the worst days in Barcelona history? Of course, especially the way it happened, the press conference flying in to sign the contract doesn't work out. It's one of the darkest days. Was that rock bottom? I mean, yes and no. It was a different emotional rock bottom to lose the greatest player who ever played the game. But then the results itself on the field, that rock bottom is what's coming. That rock bottom is where, for Barcelona on Wednesday, could be the moment when they failed to get out of the group stage for the first time in 21 years and fall to the Europa League for the first time in, again, for many fans, have never seen. It's not in their lifetime had they fallen down to the Europa League. And then the 23 points from 15 matches is Barca's worst league start in 18 years. So back to the dark days of 2003, when they weren't getting to the Champions League, when they weren't doing those things. So for Barcelona, yeah, I mean, the results now are about to hit that rock bottom. And that's my hope, that if Bayern Munich 8-2 felt like rock bottom, because it was that shock, but that was like the first rock bottom, because that was like the shock to the system. And Barca, I think for a lot of fans, didn't know the situation that the club was in. And now they've kind of lived in that world for a year and a half now. They've lived in that malaise or that sadness and that darkness or whatever. And for Bayern Munich, I think it could represent another rock bottom. But a final rock bottom would be at the end of the season when Barca don't reach top four, because that's going to be the goal. We keep just kind of not lowering the goalpost, but saying, hey, this is what Barcelona need to be right now this year so that next year can be better. And that's what they're building towards. And even if Barca lose 4-0 to Bayern Munich, yeah, and not only is it how they lost, but it's how close it does that take Barca away from top four? Does that make that even harder? Does that make it even more impossible? Does that take the belief that the team might have in themselves to be able to fight hard enough to make up the difference in the Liga? Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing, but I don't know. Yeah, results feel like rock bottom, but it still doesn't. I feel like I've already accepted where the club is at.
Yeah, and to be honest, in this match, I've kind of come round to the idea that Barcelona are not going through. I mean, as we say, we need a miracle. So anything is... Maybe that's just the pessimist within me that's sort of preparing myself for the worst and then thinking, right, okay, this can get a little bit better. But I think the advantage for this Barcelona, certainly emotionally, is that they can chalk it up to Koeman, and they can say, well, this is a symptom of something that happened before. Mm. We're building towards something longer term, and it's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be a doomsday for us. They can sort of compartmentalize the pain, put it somewhere else, and yeah, sort of fob off the blame for that. Whereas if, yeah, say Xabi had been in from the start of the season and they secured the same results, then yeah, this would be another sort of traumatic rock bottom. But because you will discuss this in depth on the podcast as well, like Laporta and how soon he should have acted, when he should have acted, Koeman and what he could have done differently. There's enough factors in there that Barcelona can kind of have the gloves on with this pain project and yeah, sort of like deal with it in a different way to the way that they have done with other rock bombs, because yeah, they've already taken the steps to try and fix the problems that led to this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm considering doing either on YouTube or maybe in a long podcast. There's people in suits or in track suits who a lot of the regular fans don't really know about. And unless you're actually covering the team like you do, or really, I mean, you cover the whole league, but unless you're really kind of there paying attention even from day to day or hour to hour and making sure you're watching, what did the CEO say? What did the assistant director, what did the physio say? And there are so many actual personnel moving parts. It wasn't just Xavi coming into Koeman Singh. It was an entire rehaul of the staff. There is a greater responsibility on even his own brother, who is one of the assistant coaches, Oscar Hernandez. There is a renewed sense of something that is happening at the club, because again, from high to low, you're having a lot of different changes. And there's a power that Xavi has and a power that he is bringing into the club, where he is making decisions in transfers, if this is to be to believe, that he has a say in transfers that no coach since the first year of Luis Enrique, not his final year even, the first year of Luis Enrique, that he had that kind of power to discuss and dictate. But even Luis Enrique, when he was, I'm trying to get the timeline right, it was prior to him when Neymar was originally decided to come, I think it was.
Yeah, right, 2013-ish.
Right, it was Tata Martino, who obviously had zero say in Neymar's arrival, obviously. But yeah, we have not seen a manager for Barcelona say, this is my style, not even style, but this is my vision. This is how I want to play. These are players that I want. I have my own scouts even looking at things. There are scouts coming from outside with him that has been, you know, Spanish speakers as well that he knows and has worked with in the past. Some of them actually were with him when he was at the club itself, right? There's so many returnees to the club after 10 years or whatever it is. So the club is in complete change. And is this a good change or is this stagnation? But I know it's not stagnation because it's going to be different people behind the scenes. And if those people behind the scenes also quote unquote fail and Barcelona isn't like jumping back up to the group, getting through the group stage or getting to the round of eight or the semifinal of the Champions League and finishing second or first in the La Liga again within 2 or 3 years, well, then that's their failed project. But it's going to be a different idea. There are new ideas coming in and literally different people. So that's going to take time. It's going to take a while to really, really hammer home and figure out.
Yeah. And in terms of just you're looking at Xavi and kind of the power he has, it's almost worked in his favor that I'm sure he would have rather had Messi there in on a purely sort of sporting sense. But in terms of being able to build a project, Messi going, and also the fact that Laporta, one way or another, he has kind of stained his presidency with the whole Koeman incident. It wasn't good leadership.
But the what if is that if Messi was still around, Koeman would still be in the job.
Probably. Yeah. No, you're probably right. I can't disagree
again,
with you there.
31 chances, scoring 23 goals with Messi. They've created 38 chances, one or two more than Real Madrid, and they've scored 32 of them. And now, yeah. And that's good enough for second in the table right now. But I mean, he would still have a job.
Completely, yeah. Yep. No, but I think the thing that works in Xavi's favor is the fact that Laporta he's had to get desperate. He's had to go to Xavi in his hour of need. Messi's gone. That power vacuum means that Xavi has sort of unrivaled power in the sense that he is the man on which everything kind of turns and rotates, and nobody has the power to say to him, well, if you don't do this or if you kind of disagree with us, then we can get rid of you, because Laporta can't get rid of Xavi now. If he gets rid of Xavi now in the next kind of year, I mean, depends on results as well and kind of how the team looks, but in terms of how that looks and the sort of unrest that would cause at the club, Laporta is tied to Xavi. He needs Xavi to be a success now. So yeah, I think that power vacuum actually works in Barcelona's favor because it means you don't get quite so many voices competing. And with the transfers that Barcelona have made in recent years with Griezmann and Coutinho, and we know, I mean, we've heard it from numerous sporting directors that there hasn't been a consistent line of thought in Barcelona's kind of sporting project for a long time. And if Xavi, okay, do you want to give the reins over to one person exclusively and just pin your hopes exclusively on him? Maybe it's not the best line of thought, but it is better than having these sort of competing views and competing voices, and certainly better than having a president like Bartomeu making the decisions on transfers.
Well, the irony is actually that there are more voices now, if you will, with more power, but there's a better hierarchy set up there in that it seems like decisions will be made in conjunction of Jordi Cruyff and Xavi together, along with Matteo Alemany and Rafa Yuste, two people in Alemany who has made some good decisions in scouting, but he also is not a football person per se. And that's kind of held against him. And with Xavi and Jordi Cruyff saying, from a football sense, this is who we want. Is this possible? And it seems like Jordi Cruyff is going to be leading that charge. And that's one of the reasons he didn't want to become manager of FC Barcelona. And then again, you're using the support that Yuste and Alemany and their ability to negotiate, which is better, I think, than what we saw from Pep Segura and even Eric Abidal. And I think Zubizarreta kind of was hampered in his final seasons by what Bartomeu was telling him that he needed to do in the likes of, because if you use that Coutinho and Griezmann money on other players that were better scouted and better fit anything that the coach might have wanted, Barcelona had better results. Easy. I mean, I'll say that very boldly. That's not difficult. So for the first time too, the sporting project itself does have this hierarchy of power where Xavi is the first one to say yes or no. Then Jordi Cruyff says yes or no. And you have two footballing minds making the decisions for the players on the field, which I think I've always, as much as, again, I was never a professional footballer either, but I mean, I would want someone who knows the game much better than me making decisions on personnel more than me. But if I know how to negotiate and go through all the contractual things and know how to speak to contacts and agents and things like that, I want to be able to do my part, because that's not what Jordi Cruyff is. He's, if anything, in China, he actually failed at that. That's why they weren't able to bring in people, because he had too much on his plate. So it seems like now there's more voices that are more diversified in what their jobs are. But there is a hierarchy of who says yes, then you get to say yes, and you get to say yes, and you get to say yes. And then the final yes is you look at you give a call to the finance department and say, can we afford this player? Can we afford this? And then they'll probably say no.
The answer is no. Yeah.
Right, next year. But at least the conversations and the player that they want make sense. And that's the other thing where, yeah, Sport and Men or David Tebow, they throw out a bunch of names at us and we're like, oh, Ferran Torres. And of course, I did it. You do the thing. But the names that I want to see continue to be thrown out there are ones that want to make sense. I want to be able to plug them in the system in a way that Coutinho just broke my brain and will always break my brain. But that's too much Coutinho hate for one day, I think, Rory. So, a final thought from you. Yeah, I mean, hope, sadness, whatever. I'll give you the final word here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a final thought to kind of round it, take it back around to that Bayern game, is that, yeah, Barcelona might not sort of win this game. They might not go through even, but it's not about that this season. It's about kind of a longer term project. And finally, I mean, I'll leave the listeners on something positive. Finally, Barcelona have a direction. It might not be up, it might not be down, it might be a little bit flat, but at least they do have a direction rather than just kind of turning any which way as they were before.
Well, the direction I want to send our listeners after you listen to this is right to Rory's Twitter. Of course, he has some good stuff. He's writing there on the Liga Lowdown. So remember, there are other teams in the league. There are 19 other teams that, as I always say too, it's not just we view Barcelona through the lens of Barcelona, but there's a lot of other teams. There's reasons why Real Betis are third, why Sevilla is second. And, you know, you don't have to read the Real Madrid stuff. We got to finish this journey. Anyway, all right. So, Rory, thanks so much for joining the show. As always, again, follow him. Just click on his name in the show notes. That'll take you right to his Twitter so you can follow along with him. Then we are on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, or usually I'm the one who tweets. So, @HiltonD13 for me, our closed Facebook group, as always, the Barcelona Podcast. YouTube, thanks so much. We hit 8,000 subscribers. That's really cool. I want to do something special. We hit 10,000, but we still got a ways for that. So, YouTube and those match reviews that I do, the Barcelona Podcast, that's a little more instant in these shows, and then Patreon, as well as how we continue to financially support the show. So thanks so much to all of our patrons as well. Most importantly, though, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.